Hey, welcome to the Marshall Pruitt Podcast, episode 57. This is a look at this weekend's Mazda Road to Indy finale at Mazda Raceway Laguna Seca. Spoke with my friend and NBCSN Indy Lights broadcast colleague, Anders Krohn, a former open wheel driver of immense talent who has brought those talents to the microphone. Anyways, Anders is someone who always has his pulse on every driver, seemingly in every junior open wheel category, does a lot of coaching, does a lot of everything. So I do my best to stay on top of the 114,000 different kids looking to make it to the Indy 500, to win IndyCar championships, and will claim to have a very solid grasp of Indy Lights, pretty solid grasp of Pro Mazda, and a somewhat okay, bordering on mediocre, possibly decent at the US F2000 level. It's a little bit by design, but nonetheless, with Anders' help, Anders, who really is plugged into everything, wanted to look through what could happen this weekend. We do have all three titles up for grabs. Each winner will get some form of graduation prize from Mazda. Whomever wins the US F2000 title, get a free season of Pro Mazda and a Soul Red Hot Rod. The winner of the Pro Mazda Championship will get the same graduation prize up to Indy Lights, and the Indy Lights champion, $1 million prize that turns into about three races, including the Indy 500, as we saw Spencer Pigot, who won the 2015 championship. Not only did he get to take part in the 100th Indy 500 and the other two races with Ray Hall Letterman Lanigan Racing, did a good enough job to get called up by Ed Carpenter Racing to spend the rest of the season in there, Fuzzy's Vodka Chevy on the road and street courses. So, great weekend. Lives will change. Lots of positivity is coming up. There'll also be a little bit of heartbreak. Nonetheless, thanks to Anders, here's a look at the next generation of open wheel and how things might shake out this weekend in Monterey. I figure with three titles to decide this weekend, you'll be there, I'll be there. Let's delve into it, because frankly, they might not be IndyCar stars yet, but among all three levels, USF 2000, Pro Mazda, and Indy Lights, these are the ones that are going to be winning Indy 500s and championships when we are older and grayer. So why don't we start off with the headliner, Indy Lights. We're coming off of Watkins Glen, where, wow, Zach Veach just stomped everyone. You and I were just giggling the whole time watching that. But the best part for me, Anders, and tell me if you agree, is instead of Santi Arusha having a nice healthy lead, seemingly just destined to go to Monterey and clean up and get that Indy Lights championship, our young Uruguayan friend has a 1-point lead over Ed Jones. Dean Stoneman isn't that far away. Zach Veach could do it. Felix Sorales. If I'm looking at championship finales and excitement, Indy Lights just got really interesting going into Monterey.
I mean, it's almost storybook material, isn't it? And yeah, thanks for having me. But I think Indy Lights, we've discussed it time and time again this year that it's the strongest we've seen it for sure in the last decade. And I mean, I'm you know, selfishly, I'd like to think that it's as strong as when I competed in it, but probably more realistically, you know, you look back at the days of when you had the Rafa Matos and Richard Antonucci back to the 07, 08, that sort of period, the J.R. Hildebrands, when they started coming in. I mean, that's when Indy Lights was just buzzing, and I feel like Indy Lights, for the first time in a few years, is truly buzzing again. And then to think that we're going to go into Mazda Raceway, and like you said, we have a 1-point difference between the leader and the second place, and then we have Zach Veach, who had, you know, the rebound of the century coming back to win at Watkins Glen, and he's also within striking distance. So I think it's just a testament to how strong Indy Lights and the whole Mazda Road to Indy, presented by Cooper Tires, by the way, the ladder is at the moment. It's just gone from strength to strength, and I definitely agree with you. I think we're going to see some Indy 500 champions coming out of this.
So looking at this weekend, we've got Santi with 319 points, representing Schmidt-Peterson Motorsports, the, you know, perennial Indy Lights, if not champion, contender. Ed Jones, again, 1 point behind for Carlin Racing. Dean Stoneman a little bit further back, not too far out of reach, but a little bit further back with Andretti Autosport. Got Zach with Bilardi. Got Felix Sorales in fifth with Carlin. Kyle Kaiser as well. Sitting there in sixth, local specialist last year. Kyle definitely flexed his muscles with his Laguna Seca knowledge. What are you looking at, Anders, for who might have an advantage, who might be on the back foot? Is Santi, who, you know, I don't know if he quite has the steely nerves of a of someone ready to jump into IndyCar yet. We know he has the speed, but what are you looking at among these top five or six championship contenders? Anybody stand out as, I don't know if I want to say a favorite, but at least someone with a strong chance of coming out as a champion? Are there any others you think that might go backwards?
Well, I mean, I guess my question back to you would be, do you have 3 hours? I've obviously worked with Santi Urrutia previously when he raced Pro Mazda, and I think what impressed me so much about him last year was his ability to just stay extremely calm and cool and collected even when things aren't going right. So I think if he's able to take advantage of that at Mazda Raceway, that could pay off big, because tempers are going to be flaring, there's going to be all sorts of aggression coming, so it could really be down to the guy that stays the calmest. Now, with that said, you know, we thought that maybe Ed Jones had lost a little bit of spark there at some point in the season, but he came back at Watkins Glen and kind of proved the critics wrong that he is here to contend. So probably the guy I'm the most worried about as far as outright speed is concerned is Dean Stoneman. I mean, they really sort of had their peak, as it were, speed-wise around the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, both on the oval and the road course. But since then, I mean, I look back to Toronto, and they looked like they were just ridiculously oversprung, and they were completely missed the boat there. And then you fast forward, you know, they didn't necessarily have all the speed needed at Mid-Ohio, and then now, you know, Watkins Glen as well. They were never really there in contention speed-wise, so that would be my biggest worry, and I think he's going to have to really come up with something unique to contend. I think it'll be close between Carlin and Schmidt with Jones and Sorales as well, who's shown a lot of speed. And then, you know, then there's the trump card of Zach Beach. What can he do? I mean, who knows what Bilardi Auto Racing is going to show up with? And that's, again, what I've loved so much about this season, is that you haven't seen one team or one driver dominate every round. It's kind of been every single team has a shot at it. And then, oh, by the way, don't forget Sean Rahal joining the fray again.
Exactly.
And he could throw a wild card into this whole thing and upset the championship candidates as well. So, again, to summarize, I have no clue what's going to happen, but I would say the likely bets, from a numbers perspective, certainly to walk away with the championship would be Ed Jones and Santi Urrutia, but also Zach Veach seems to be on a bit of a roll.
We have a doubleheader this weekend as well, so it's not just one race, but two. So we are fortunate that all of these young drivers have more than one chance to get it right. And as you know, the flip side, Anders, it's two chances to get it wrong as well. I'm with you. I think Santi, this has been a good year for him. Even the mistakes, even the brain farts, even the pushing too hard when he shouldn't, or whatever it might be, I think that he has probably learned more than any driver in the series that I can think of this year through the positives and the negatives. I look at Ed, and I think that we were wowed by his debut last year, running off three wins in a row. Thought, well, if he can do that, boy, maybe he's just going to take this whole thing all together. We've seen him come through or get a couple more wins this year, as you and I spoke about at Watkins Glen. Been looking for a little bit more of that primal side of Ed. And, you know, we know that he is smart and very calculated, but I can't think of a smart or calculated IndyCar champion for many, many years, someone who relies on that alone. There's usually some sort of animal aggression that gets blended into that mix. Then I look at Santi and think, well, this kid definitely has the primal stuff handled. Between the two of them, the two who are, you know, 1-2 in the championship, they have everything. I don't know if they have everything in one package, but they definitely share the traits. And I look at Dean, especially, and piggybacking on exactly what you said, it should be reminded, or we should remember, that last year, barring Matty Brabham jumping out and doing well for the first couple of races and then ending the season there, was essentially Shelby Blackstock on his own at Andretti Autosport. So if we're looking at a new chassis, a team having to develop a new car, and a rookie driver in Shelby, it's a bit of a hard position to expect Shelby to hand off setups to a Dean for 2016 or the team in general and be running up front with some of the other teams. So seeing how far Dean and the team have come this year to develop their version of the Dallara the Dallara Isle 15, we have seen those peaks and valleys, and again, that speaks to them having to find what works. Know that he has the talent. I definitely believe he has the resolve, but yeah, like you, I wouldn't be surprised if they struggled. I wouldn't necessarily pin it on Dean for a lack of ability. And I absolutely love the Sean Rahal factor. That might be my favorite part of the weekend, Anders. Here's a guy, nothing to lose, no championship to gain. He, you know, it's truly all about going and getting whatever he can. You know, if I'm looking at the drivers in the championship hunt, I may be walking down to Sean's tent saying, all right, buddy, what's it going to cost me? You know, if I need you to move out of the way, you know, is that Starbucks in the morning? What am I doing? But long story short, I think we should have absolutely awesome races at Mazda Raceway Laguna Seca and Indy Lights for those with something to fight for in terms of a championship, that $1 million advancement prize, the start in the Indy 500. But let's also look at some of those with something to prove. We haven't spoken about Andre Negrau, for example. Someone who been on the podium the last four races. Someone who came into the series. I think we all were intrigued by his pedigree and potential. Sitting seventh right now. Championship is definitely a remote possibility, beyond remote. What does he need to do to either impress folks to be considered for IndyCar? Does he need another year? We look at Shelby Blackstock, Zachary Clayman, DeMello. I know that Zachary, certainly, we should see him back next year. Dalton Kellett, Neil Albarico, someone else who you and I been hoping would find the switch and flip it, and I think he might have another year, need another year to do that. Garrett Grist. Let's talk about some of the guys going into Laguna Seca, Anders, who have one more weekend to really make a decision whether they should stay or whether they've learned enough to consider moving to IndyCar, starting with Andre.
Yeah, I think Andre would be the perfect guy to come back for a second year and really go for the championship. He knows the tracks now. He knows the team. It'd be great for him to stay with Schmidt-Peters Motorsports for another year. He's had a great teammate this year in Santi, and they've been pushing each other really hard. And I've been really impressed with his mindset and his approach to it all, and every time I've talked to him, he's a really likable guy, and I actually think he's one of those Brazilians that come into the series and actually charm people and have people get behind him. So I know he's talking about doing IndyCar next year, and that's his goal, but from a driver development / momentum perspective, in my humble opinion, he'd probably be better off returning to lights next year, really showing strong in the championship, and then making the step up, as opposed to potentially making the step up to IndyCar for next year and then maybe doing it 1 year too early and then losing some momentum. So that would, in the case of Andre Negrau, that would probably be my ideal scenario. And then there's a bunch of these other guys, like you mentioned, with Shelby Blackstock. I know he's looking at moving up, but Indy Lights is so competitive right now that you can definitely easily justify spending another year, a total of 3 years in Indy Lights before having to move up. There's certainly, from my perspective, no stigma anymore of, well, if you haven't got the job done in a year or two, then you got to just move up or do something else. I mean, I think it's so competitive now that it's almost a bit like GP2 was a few years ago, where you had drivers doing the series for 4 or 5 years. I mean, Luca Filippi, I mean, how many GP2 races did he do? And he came over the pond, and he's a rock star. So I think, and another guy that's racing an IndyCar right now that has a ton of junior open wheel experience before making his debut in IndyCar is James Hinchcliffe. I mean, look at him. He did Formula BMW, Pro Mazda, then he did, 4 years of Atlantics or 3 years of Atlantics, and then another 2 years of Indy Lights, and yet it was a lot of years in the junior categories, but you know what? When he showed up IndyCar, he was prepared.
Ready to go.
In my opinion, he's capitalized on that. He hasn't wasted any opportunities.
I'm with you. I think that's something that gets overlooked, and granted, it's not abnormal in sports. You know, the kid who really shows incredible talent in high school or in their first year of college, you know, their parents, even the pro teams, are looking to snap them up as early as possible. We know that motor racing is often a young person's game. But to your point, I look at some of the drivers here and say, Neil Albarico, you showed us a lot of really good things in USF 2000 and Pro Mazda, but you need another year at least in Indy Lights, and again, not because he's deficient or lacks the overall potential to exceed whatever you know targets he's set for himself, but if we just look at his first year in Indy Lights, the numbers aren't there and the poise isn't there, and there's nothing wrong with coming back. There's no need to exert the internal pressure that I must go as soon as possible. Do what Hinchcliffe did. Heck, look at Carlos Munoz. That kid, you know, seemingly raced every open wheel series on the planet before he got to Indy Lights. He's still young as can be, yet has so much experience. He's currently sitting 7th or 8th in the IndyCar Championship and leading the entire Andretti Autosport team in the points. And he's able to do that relatively early in his IndyCar career because he did spend so much time preparing himself at the college level, that the transition to IndyCar was not a massive shock to the system. If anything, he looked ready right from the moment he stepped into one of the big cars. All right, well...
Yeah, and you know, I have worked with a lot of young drivers and parents, and contrary to popular belief, there is zero reward for being the youngest driver to make it to IndyCar or the driver that made it to IndyCar with only 1 year of open-wheel experience before. There is, however, a reward for staying in IndyCar for a multitude of years and being successful. And I think a lot of that stems back to having the development in the junior categories without being rushed through the system. And if you look at the case studies of those who have succeeded and those who have failed, the failure rate is far higher with those that have rushed through the system as opposed to taking their time.
Well, one thing I can say for sure is this crop of Indy Lights talent, from the rookies to the, quote, veterans, I haven't seen this kind of depth in quite a while, and it makes me, I'm really encouraged about what's coming to IndyCar. Santi should be there. Ed Jones, Dean Stowman, Zach Veach, Felix, you know, on down. There are many who should be there. They aren't all destined to be champions. They aren't all destined to be drinking milk at Indianapolis Motor Speedway, but compared to some years where it's one driver, and the next year it's one driver, and we should have multiple drivers moving up, both the Indy Lights champion and a few others, and I think we're actually going to enrich the IndyCar series. There aren't many, and unless I'm misreading things, Anders, there aren't many that are sitting on giant fortunes just waiting to write a $7 million check to an IndyCar team next year. But I think that there are enough that can afford, through personal sponsors, through family connections or family money, to at least be on the grid for part of a season next year. And that's big for IndyCar too, right? We're looking at roughly 22 full-time IndyCar entries this year. If, through all this talent and the advancement prize for the champion and some of the others, if we can get that IndyCar number up to 23, 24, 25 at more races, you have to look at Indy Lights and not only say it's working, but it's really working. It's really doing what it's supposed to. Not just sending up the one best each year, but actually helping to fill out the rest of the grid. If Shelby can do the Indy 500, as he expresses interest in doing, we get a few others. It's just good from a business standpoint. It tells you the machine is working and also helping these drivers to achieve their dreams as well. So, yeah, I haven't always been a huge fan each season of Indy Lights, looking at some of the relatively reduced talent pools on offer. This is one of those years where I just look at it and go, wow, this is cool. This is really, really cool. Well,
That was a really diplomatic way of saying it, Marshall. I like that.
Well, it works on occasion. All right, well, we're not stupid enough. Well, you're not stupid enough. I am. But we're not stupid enough to predict winners for the Indy Lights Championship. And if I did have a feeling of who would get it done, I would actually say it. But coming off of a Watkins Glen where things went completely sideways when that wasn't expected, yeah, all I can tell you is tune in, watch, listen, whatever is needed. Go there if you're nearby, if you happen to be in the general Bay Area or in California. Come up to Mazda Raceway Laguna Seca and see the future stars. Then below Indy Lights standards, we have a Pro Mazda. And if we look at that field, there have been some badasses there as well. The Pro Mazda grid isn't as full as we would like to see. We know that there's the new Tatis chassis coming next season for USF 2000, the following year. That same universal chassis will replace what's currently being used in Pro Mazda. So the Pro Mazda series, a little bit of a transition phase. We aren't seeing big, big grids. Tell me if you agree, whether we have 10 full-timers or 100 full-timers, I can tell you that the kids at the absolute top of the series this year are genuine badasses and should be kicking some butt in Indy Lights, if not next year, the following.
I couldn't agree anymore, and you know, there's been such a big focus on the grid size that almost you lose the little bit focus of the fact that the quality in the current grid is just fantastic. And I think if you had made this a 20-car grid, the same people would be fighting for the top five spots as have been fighting for them this year. So certainly you want to see some better numbers for the potential sustainability of the series. Overall, the year has been great, and it's been an interesting watch to see the development of the championship and the fluctuations of the ups and downs of essentially the only three guys that have won races this year.
So if we look at just the points alone, we have Wisconsin's finest, Aaron Tielitz, leading the championship, 345 points. We have Pato O'Ward, who, sorry for my Irish friends, but the kid's not from Ireland. Young Mexican charger who's done a whole bunch of winning this year. He is drafting Aaron in the points. A.A. Ron drafting him at 331 points in second. Nico Jamin, who won the USF 2000 championship last year, earned the graduation prize from Mazda, piloting a lovely soul red entry. Nico's in third at 271 points. Behind him, we've got Will Owen in fourth, Jake Parsons in fifth. Looking at the amount of points on offer and who can make progress in the championship, there's not a whole lot of wiggle room for someone, Jake to vault from fifth to win the championship, but we do know that there is indeed a good fight awaiting us, but especially between Aaron Tielitz and Pato O'Ward. What do we need to know about those two drivers, their strengths, their weaknesses, Anders, and how that might play out over a very busy weekend of Pro Mazda racing at Laguna Seca?
With the triple header coming up, it's going to be interesting, because it's basically going to be, the good news for either of them is whoever is the strongest on average, as it were, over the course of the weekend is going to walk away with a championship. So it's really going to be, if one of them wins all three races, he wins the championship, and vice versa. So that's the good news. So the bad news is, in my opinion, both of them are deserving of the scholarship, and both are ready to make the step up to Indy Lights. So obviously one person is going to walk away a happy camper, and the other one with a lot of uncertainty for the future. But as far as the two are concerned, I mean, it looked like early on this year that Pato was just going to walk away with it. And to some extent, it resembled a little bit last year what we saw when Nico Jamin really started grabbing a hold of the championship and Aaron kind of started falling back in the second half of the season. He was barely even a factor. Well, what's happened this year is Aaron, instead of falling behind, he's just knuckled down and figured out a way to, how do I improve and how do I get better and how do I overturn this advantage that Pato is having? And, I mean, his turnaround, man, has just been one for the storybooks. It's been, the fact that he came from so many points behind, and not just the points behind, but mentally as well, when you have your teammate win 5 out of the 6 first races, you got to be thinking to yourself, man, what am I doing here?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to ProMoz in 2017 again, I guess.
Yeah, so you know that's been the interesting thing there, and then it was great to see Nico as well get those 2 wins at Mid-Ohio. He's always been crazy strong in Mid-Ohio. I mean, even back to the days when he raced with Pabst in 2014 in USF 2000, and so that was always going to be his track, and it's good to see him kind of up there as well. So I think what we're going to watch out for is Aaron Keelis is the one that needs to be the most conservative, but he doesn't want to be too conservative and get caught out. And then we have Ponto that needs to be somewhat smart and still needs to take some risk. And then we have Nico Jamin, who, in a very similar position in Indy Lights to Zach Veach or Dean Stoneman, can take all the risk in the world because he's got absolutely nothing to lose.
That's what I love about this as well. I mean, Aaron, who I met a couple of years ago, that kid has always impressed me. I might even say outside the cockpit, more outside the cockpit than in, because he's a heck of a driver, so I'm not diminishing that in any way. Just his resolve, his ability to walk up to someone he doesn't know, introduce himself, see if there might be an interest in supporting him. He has a bit of a throwback personality to what made pro racing possible for so many young drivers in the 60s, 70s, 80s. It wasn't through email. It wasn't through something really simple. It was just old school, old fashioned. Hi, my name's Aaron. What's your name? Just a very engaging kid. Thing is, he's done amazing things to get as far as he has. He's now leading the championship, has the potential of winning it and getting the graduation prize to go to Indy Lights. If he doesn't win the championship, and I'm not saying it would be easy, but he's one of very few young drivers where I'm somewhat confident he could go and still make it happen without that free ticket up to the final step of the Mazda Road to Indy. With that said, he's also a badass operator, and so is Pato. That, again, another cool thing, and flies in the face of some of the limitations the pre-Road to Indy days offered, where you go, yep, that one kid, he's going straight to the top, and who really knows or cares about anybody else? We've got 3 kids here, Aaron, Pato, and Nico. I think Nico, could he pull off a win this weekend out of the 3? One of the 3? Very possibly. Think he might need to come back for another year. But nonetheless, if I'm looking at the 2 kids with a shot at the championship, both of them deserve to be in lights. Both of them, at least in my opinion, tell me if you agree, I can see no reason for either of them to come back next year, because I think they have learned all there is to learn in Pro Mazda, and with the somewhat strong group we expect to be leaving lights and going to IndyCar, it's good to know we've got a couple of badasses ready to backfill some of those positions.
Yeah, I completely agree, and it's going to be, like I touched on, there's going to be elation and there's going to be heartbreak this weekend, no matter how you look at it. And out of the 2, I mean, out of the 3, really, mainly out of the 2, I can't say that there's one more deserving than the other. I mean, it's just basically throw the dice and see who comes out on top, and whoever it is will absolutely deserve it, and whoever doesn't win it, they both have poise, they both have strength in their character and driving to bring them to the top of the sport. And if you keep on hustling, no matter what you do, if you're an Aaron Keelis hustling the golf course in Minnesota, or if you're Pato Award working your connections in Texas and Mexico to try and get funding, I mean, if they keep the hustle up, they will make it to the top, because they are such special talents, both of them.
Well, let's wrap up on the first step of the ladder, USF 2000. As I mentioned before we started recording, not that I don't love the kids who are starting out at the bottom, but I tend not to give them too much time and too much coverage because, frankly, they still have a lot to prove. And I'm not a believer that you heap too much praise on someone succeeding at the lowest level. Nonetheless, when we're talking about a Santi Arushia, when we're talking about a Spencer Pigot, the reigning Indy Lights champion, they all started, or I shouldn't say all, but most of them started at the USF 2000 level or similar. So, again, not to disregard Anthony Martin, who's leading the championship right now, Parker Thompson, Victor Franzoni in third. But nonetheless, they're just starting out. But tell me of the young guns, the youngest of the young guns, Anders, which ones have impressed you the most, and whether they win championships or not and get that automatic ticket to Pro Mazda courtesy of Mazda, which ones are you looking at and say, yep, these kids are definitely going to be moving up that ladder because they've shown the talent to do so?
I'm not going to earn an intelligence award for this, but it's quite easy to look to the top of the charts, and expectedly so, Anthony Martin and Parker Thompson have done what they should have done, which is come in for their second year, you know, with the winningest team in USF 2000 history, the best returning drivers from last year. Combine that with arguably the best team in USF 2000 history, and you're bound to win some races. So the battle between the two of them has been great, though. It's been up, it's been down, and right now it looks like Anthony Martin has just a little bit of a mental edge over Parker Thompson. It started out with Thompson, I think, just having a little bit more raw speed, and I don't know if it was anticipation that was killing Anthony early on in the year. Maybe he was expecting to go out of his previous car from the last year and just go straight to P1 right away, but I think once he realized that he still needs to work for it, he's really found his feet and gone strongly. And then there's Victor Franzoni, who he's one of the most raw talent drivers I've ever seen. Yeah, he'll overdrive the car every so often, and he'll pitch it sideways, and, you know, he's GRC racing that car more than he's open and racing that car. But, I mean, the guy is so talented. And I guess the slight, I don't know if disappointment, but the one that you would have liked to see a little bit stronger consistently would have been Jordan Lloyd. So you would have liked to see him at least contend for race wins a little bit more often than he has. Luke Gavin's had a strong second year, but not, you know, he hasn't been able to, again, consistently be fighting for the pole positions and the race wins like Anthony Martin and Parker Thompson have.
And I'm also, and this shows my age, but I also love the fact that in Franzoni we have a young Brazilian who I think has definitely shown that he has the pace and has the potential, if provided he wants to keep learning on the road to Indy. Hopefully as some of the old farts, the Tony Canons and Elio Castroneveses, hang up their helmets in the next couple of years. You know, you always want to make sure you have at least one really good Brazilian in IndyCar, so... you know, and if we were to have him in the ground a few years, even better. Well, good Lord, man, I'm going to be there covering this with words and pictures. You're going to be there with Kevin Leash, super producer Sean Belby, and the entire NBCSN team capturing the Indy Lights portion and just capturing general Mazda insanity at Laguna Seca this weekend. Hopefully you get to enjoy yourself as well. There's only 417 different sessions to look after, but hopefully you enjoy your trip out to Monterey, Anders, and I'll look forward to seeing you, and B, thank you so much for helping us get a little bit smarter and get prepared for a busy weekend, but also a big weekend that's going to transform some young drivers' lives.
Yeah, no, thank you for allowing me on, Marshall. It's been a pleasure, and you know, for this weekend, I'll just put my blinders on, heat up a bottle or a can of popcorn, and just sit back and enjoy. So there's going to be some fireworks.
Awesome. Thanks, brother. See you in a day or two. And that's our look at the Mazda Road to Indy season finale at Mazda Raceway Laguna Seca. Thanks again for listening in. Check out more podcasts and other content at MarshallPruitt.com.